kingdom of heaven is like a man on his way abroad who summoned his servants and entrusted his property to them. To one he gave 5 talents, to another 2, to a third 1, each in proportion to his ability. Then he set out, and the man who'd received the 5 talents promptly went and traded with them and made 5 more. The man who'd received 2 made 2 more in the same way. But the man who'd received 1 went off and dug a hole in the ground and hid his master's money. Now, a long time after, the master of those servants came back and went through his accounts with them. The man who had received the 5 talents came forward, bringing 5 more. "Sir," he said, "you entrusted me with 5 talents. Here are 5 more that I have made." His master said to him, "Well done, good and faithful servant. You have shown you can be faithful in small things. I will trust you with greater. Come and join in your master's happiness." Next, the man with the 2 talents came forward. "Sir," he said, "you entrusted me with 2 talents. Here are 2 more that I have made." His master said to him, "Well done, good and faithful servant. You have shown you can be faithful in small things. I will trust you with greater. Come and join in your master's happiness." Last came forward the man who had the 1 talent. "Sir," he said, "I'd heard you were a hard man, reaping where you have not sown and gathering where you have not scattered. So I was afraid, and I went off and hid your talent in the ground. Here it is. Was yours, you have it back." But his master answered him, "You wicked and lazy servant. So you knew that I reap where I have not sown and gather where I have not scattered? Well then, you should have deposited my money with the bankers, and on my return I would have recovered my capital with interest. So now, take the talent from him and give it to the man who has the 5 talents. For to everyone who has will be given more, and he will have more than enough. But from the man who has not, even what he has will be taken away. As for this good-for-nothing servant, throw him out into the dark, where there will be weeping and grinding of teeth." The Gospel of the Lord. I think Jesus probably didn't have the same bankers as we seem to have today. Nothing to do with that. No more war, no more violence, no more terrorism. Pope Benedict's words echoing loud and clear at the conclusion of a meeting he summoned in Assisi on the 27th of October last month. And that was 25 years since the first occasion that Blessed John Paul II had convened in 1986. There met leaders and representatives of Christian and all world leaders, all world religions, and people of no faith at all. Pope Benedict was keen that if they were a leader, they should be there of no faith at all. There for a day of reflection, a day of dialogue, of course, prayer for those people that pray, a whole for peace and justice in the world, a pilgrimage to the place and the home and the peace of St. Francis of Assisi. Since Remembrance Sunday last year, a few of us have made 1 or 2 pilgrimages, not to Assisi, but certainly to places that yearn for peace, or to remind us of the horror of war. I think first, those of us that went to the Holy Land set out a year ago this coming week, to Bethlehem, Jerusalem, Jerusalem, city of peace. We were 8 nights in Bethlehem, and every time we went out, there was the wall, the Berlin-type wall that we had to go through, the checkpoint, the armed young Israeli soldiers coming on the coach, maybe checking our passports, maybe just looking at us. You were conscious of them armed. And that Berlin-type wall, keeping people apart. The seizure of Palestinian lands And in the last 2 or 3 weeks, when Palestine had been bidding for the United Nations for some recognition, the Jewish people said, we'll take more land and we'll build more settlements on their land. The motorway type roads that were for the Jewish people and the people that they allowed down them, but if not, you went down the back road and not that way. And we wondered, can they not see? Do they not realize what they're doing and what they're storing up for the future? And the future may not be that far away. When you think of all that they went through, all throughout history, but particularly in the Second World War, and I then recall the words of the newly elected president in 1945, President Truman of the United States, who was frequently exasperated by the Zionist lobby, and he wrote this: I fear very much that the Jews are like all underdogs. When they get on top, they are just as intolerant and cruel as the people were to them when they were underneath. Which brings me to Auschwitz, which, again, some of us were there in September. That place that symbolizes genocide and the Holocaust throughout the entire world, and the depths to which humanity can sink, how completely out of control humanity can come. We saw it. You've seen it. If you haven't been there, you've seen it on screens, you've seen it in books, you've seen, read about it. Well, that too, a place of pilgrimage. And one pilgrim, not with us, you'll gather why in a moment, spoke. This is the words we had written down. To speak in this place of horror, in this place where unprecedented mass crimes were committed against God and humanity, is almost impossible, and is particularly difficult and troubling for a Christian, for a Pope from Germany. Obviously, words from Pope Benedict when he was on his visit to that place as Pope. And he went on, in a place like this, words fail. In the end, there can only be a dread silence, a silence which is itself a heartfelt cry to God. Why, Lord? Why did you remain silent? How could you tolerate all this? He went on, in silence then, we bow our heads before the endless line of those who suffered and were put to death here. Yet our silence becomes in turn a plea for forgiveness and reconciliation, a plea to the living God. We must never let this happen again. And of course, it was John Paul II, when he visited, but on other occasions too, spoke, we will only have peace when we have justice, when we have freedom, and when we have forgiveness. This brought me to the book that we were recommended to look at, read in Auschwitz, by a Polish Catholic countess who was born in 1898 and who died aged 104 in 2002, and who was virtually a prisoner for the entire length of the war, pushed from pillar to post, not knowing each day whether that day would be her last. But the book is entitled Those Who Trespass Against Us. And here's an extract. After many executions, of course, most of them women, because she was in a women's camp, I was increasingly troubled by fear when I prayed the Lord's Prayer. My problem was the phrase, as we forgive those who trespass against us. To forgive what was happening around me was a sheer impossibility. I was not concerned at all with my own case, but with the suffering of the other thousands around me. I could not lie to God. Finally, after agonizing for ages and biting myself terribly in the process, I cut those words out of the Lord's Prayer and recited my mutilated version till the end of the war. I could resonate with that because when I was in one of the London parishes and we'd had quite a few murders, but particularly two twin brothers, one was murdered, both of them were stabbed, one very injured but lived, the other one, he died. When visiting the family, I knew them, and we were planning the funeral, the mother said, and I suppose you'll expect me to say, forgive us as we forgive, but I can't. I think we can resonate with that, because we often find forgiveness for all sorts of different reasons very difficult. And I think we as a community in Penzance, we know that. Something we've got to live with and learn. That in turn brought me to Corrie ten Boom, imprisoned in Ravensbrook, which incidentally is where the Countess ended up, moved all over Poland and Germany in different camps, but she ended up in Ravensbrook. Corrie's sister died there, but Corrie lived and spent some time after the war speaking about forgiveness and reconciliation, much of it in Germany, but she had also come to England. And I remember as a student in the 60s, Corrie ten Boom, we went to hear her speak. And I've always remembered it, and it's also written down as well. She says, one day, after a talk about reconciliation, forgiveness, a man went to shake my hand to thank me for my talk. And I froze as I realized in horror that I recognized him as one of the guards, the SS guards from Ravensbrück. Initially, I felt incapable of taking his hand and responding. But as I did do, I took his hand, the most incredible thing happened. From my shoulder, along my arm, and through my hand, a current seemed to pass from me to him, while in my heart sprang a love for this stranger that almost overwhelmed me. She goes on to write, and so I discovered that it's not on our forgiveness any more than on our goodness that this world's healing hinges, but on God's. Because when he tells us to love our enemies, he gives along with the command the love itself. I want to end with another quote from the Countess, that Polish Countess. It's quite an emotional bit. I hope I get through without cracking. It's the end of the war. She's been driven from Ravensbrück, and she writes, driven out of Germany through Switzerland into Italy, where, as many of you probably know, many of the Poles ended up after the war. She says, now we were driving through thickly populated southern Germany along the Danube. We passed through Ulm, or rather, the shapeless expanse of rubble bearing that name. Appalled by the sight, I was trying to make out the ruins of the famous cathedral, when suddenly there reared up before our eyes that magnificent cathedral. Intact, untouched, not a mirage, but a concrete architectonic reality, her words, if one might speak of such a Gothic masterpiece as a concrete reality. Ulm has the tallest cathedral spire in the world, over 500 feet. That mighty spire pointed heavenwards, as though to demonstrate the victory that only the victory of the only power that really matters.